fingernail marks. He was desperate to get away, to drag himself by his fingertips if necessary. He was alive the entire time that thing sharpened its claws on the stone while its master watched.
So what does that mean?
She smiled grimly at him. It means that you're in a lot of trouble. And, as Kaol's face paled, Selena realized with a jolt that perhaps the champion's killer and Elena's mysterious evil force might be one and the same. Seated at the dining table, Selena flipped through the book. Nothing, nothing, nothing. She scanned page after page for any sign of the two word marks that had been drawn beside Varen's body. There had to be a connection. She stopped as a map of Aurelia appeared. Maps had always interested her. There was something bewitching in knowing one's precise location in relation to others on the earth. She gently traced a finger along the eastern coast. She began in the south, at Bunjali, the Eelway capital, then went up, curving and snaking all the way to Rifthold. Her finger then traveled through Mia, then north and inland to Orinth, then back to the sea, to the Saurian coast, and finally to the very tip of the continent and the North Sea beyond. She stared at Orinth, that city of light and learning, the pearl of Aurelia and capital of Terrasen, her birthplace. Selena slammed shut the book. Glancing around her room, the assassin let out a long sigh. When she managed to sleep, her dreams were haunted by ancient battles, by swords with eyes, by word marks that swirled around her head and blinded her with their bright colors. She could see the gleaming armor of Fae and mortal warriors, hear the clash of shields and the snarl of vicious beasts, and smell blood and rotting corpses all around her. Carnage trailed in her wake. Otterlin's assassin shuddered.
"Oh, good. I hoped you'd still be awake," the Crown Prince said, and Selena jumped from her seat to find Dorian approaching.
He looked tired and a bit ruffled. She opened her mouth, then shook her head. "What are you doing here? It's almost midnight and I've got a test tomorrow."
She couldn't deny having him here was a bit of a relief. The murderer only seemed to attack champions when they were alone. "Have you moved from literature to history?"
He surveyed the books on the table.
"A Brief History of Modern Aurelia," he read. "Symbols and Power, Eelway Culture and Customs." He raised an eyebrow.
"I read what I like."
He slid into the seat beside her, his leg brushing hers. "Is there a connection between all of these?"
"No."
It wasn't quite a lie, though she had hoped for all of them to contain something about word marks, or what they meant beside a corpse.
"I assume you heard about Varen's death?"
"Of course," he said, a dark expression crossing his handsome face. She was all too aware of how close his leg was, but she couldn't bring herself to shift away.
"And you're not at all concerned that so many champions have been brutally murdered at the hands of someone's feral beast?"
Dorian leaned in, his eyes fixed on hers. "All of those murders occurred in dark, isolated hallways. You're never without guards, and your chambers are well watched."
"I'm not concerned for myself," she said sharply, pulling back a bit, which wasn't entirely true. "I just think it reflects poorly on your esteemed father to have all of this going on."
"When was the last time you bothered to care for the reputation of my esteemed father?"
"Since I became his son's champion. So perhaps you ought to devote some additional resources to solving these murders, before I win this absurd competition just because I'm the last one left alive."
"Any more demands?" he asked, still close enough for her lips to graze his if she dared.
"I'll let you know if I think of any."
Their eyes locked. A slow smile spread across her face. What sort of a man was the Crown Prince? Though she didn't want to admit it, it was nice to have someone around, even if he was a Haveliard. She pushed claw marks and brainless corpses from her thoughts.
"Why are you so disheveled? Has Caltaine been clawing at you?"
"Caltaine? Thankfully not recently. But what a miserable day it was. The pups are mutts and..."
He put his head in his hands.
"Pups?" "One of my bitches gave birth to a litter of mongrels. Before, they were too young to tell, but now, well, I'd hoped for purebreds." Are we speaking of dogs or of women?
Which would you prefer?
He gave her an impish grin. Oh, hush up, she hissed, and he chuckled.
Why, might I ask, are you so disheveled?
His smile faltered.
Kaol told me he took you to see the body. I hope it wasn't too harrowing.
Not at all. It's just that I haven't slept well.
Me neither, he admitted.
He straightened.
Will you play the pianoforte for me?
Selena tapped her foot on the floor, wondering how he had moved on to such a different subject. Of course not.
You played beautifully.
If I had known someone was spying on me, I wouldn't have played at all.
Why is playing so personal for you?
He leaned back in his chair. I can't hear or play music without... Never mind.
No. Tell me what you were going to say.
Nothing interesting, she said, stacking the books.
Does it stir up memories?
She eyed him, searching for any sign of mockery. Sometimes.
Memories of your parents?
He reached to help her stack the remaining books. Selena stood suddenly. Don't ask such stupid questions.
I'm sorry if I pried.
She didn't respond. The door in her mind that she kept locked at all times had been cracked open by the question, and now she tried frantically to close it. Seeing his face, seeing him so near to her, the door shut, and she turned the key.
It's just, he said, oblivious to the battle that had just occurred. It's just that I don't know anything about you.
I'm an assassin. Her heartbeat calmed. That's all there is to know.
Yes, he said with a sigh. But why is it so wrong for me to want to know more?
Like how you became an assassin, and what things were like for you before that. It's not interesting.
I wouldn't find it boring.
She didn't say anything.
Please?
One question, and I promise nothing too sensitive. Her mouth twisted to the side, and she looked at the table. What harm was there in a question? She could choose not to reply. Very well. He grinned. I need a moment to think of a good one. She rolled her eyes, but sat down. After a few seconds, he asked, Why do you like music so much?
She made a face.
You said nothing sensitive.
Is that prying?
How different is that from asking why you like to read? No, that question is fine. She let out a long breath through her nose and stared at the table. I like music, she said slowly, because when I hear it, I lose myself within myself, if that makes sense. I become empty and full all at once, and I can feel the whole earth roiling around me. When I play, I'm not destroying. I'm creating.
She chewed on her lip.
I used to want to be a healer, back before this became my profession. When I was almost too young to remember, I wanted to be a healer. She shrugged. Music reminds me of that feeling.
She laughed under her breath.
I've never told anyone that, she admitted, then saw his smile. Don't mock me. He shook his head, wiping the smile from his lips.
I'm not mocking you, I'm just...
Unused to hearing people speak from the heart?
Well, yes.
She smiled slightly. Now it's my turn. Are there any limitations?
No.
He tucked his hands behind his head.
I'm not nearly as private as you are.
She made a face as she thought of the question. Why aren't you married yet?
Married? I'm 19.
Yes, but you're the crown prince. He crossed his arms. She tried not to notice the cut of muscle that shifted just beneath the fabric of his shirt.
Ask another question.
I want to hear your answer. It must be interesting if you're so ardently resisting. He looked at the window and the snow that swirled beyond.
I'm not married, he said softly, because I can't stomach the idea of marrying a woman inferior to me in mind and spirit. It would mean the death of my soul.
Marriage is a legal contract. It's not a sacred thing. As crown prince, you should have given up such fanciful notions. What if you're ordered to marry for the sake of an alliance? Would you start a war because of your romantic ideals?
It's not like that.
Oh? Your father wouldn't command you to marry some princess in order to strengthen his empire?
My father has an army to do that for him.
You could easily love some woman on the side. Marriage doesn't mean you can't love other people.
His sapphire eyes flashed.
You marry the person you love and none other, he said.
And she laughed.
You're mocking me. You're laughing in my face.
You deserve to be laughed at for such foolish thoughts. I spoke from my soul. You speak only from selfishness.
You're remarkably judgmental.
What's the point in having a mind if you don't use it to make judgments?
What's the point in having a heart if you don't use it to spare others from the harsh judgments of your mind?
Oh, well said, Your Highness.
He stared at her sullenly.
Come now, I didn't wound you that severely.
You've attempted to ruin my dreams and ideals.
I get enough from my mother as it is. You're just being cruel.
I'm being practical. There's a difference. And you're the Crown Prince of Otterlin. You're in a position where it's possible for you to change Aurelia for the better. You could help create a world where true love isn't needed to secure a happy ending.
And what sort of world would I need to create for that to happen?
A world where men govern themselves.
You speak of anarchy and treason.
I do not speak of anarchy. Call me a traitor all you like. I've been convicted as an assassin already.
He sidled closer to her, and his fingers brushed hers, calloused, warm, and hard.
You can't resist the opportunity to respond to everything I say, can you?
She felt restless, but at the same time remarkably still. Something was brought to life and laid to sleep in his gaze. Your eyes are very strange, he said. I've never seen any with such a bright ring of gold.
If you're attempting to woo me with flattery, I'm afraid it won't work.
I was merely observing. I have no agenda.
He looked at his hand, still touching hers. Where did you get that ring?
She contracted her hand into a fist as she pulled it away from him. The amethyst in her ring glowed in the firelight. It was a gift.
From whom?
That's none of your concern.
He shrugged, though she knew better than to tell him who'd really given it to her. Rather, she knew Kaol wouldn't want Dorian to know.
I'd like to know who's been giving rings to my champion.
The way the collar of his black jacket lay across his neck made her unable to sit still. She wanted to touch him, to trace the line between his tan skin and the golden lining of the fabric.
Billiards? She asked, rising to her feet. I could use another lesson.
Selena didn't wait for his answer as she strode toward the gaming room. She very much wanted to stand close to him and have her skin warm under his breath. She liked that. Worse than that, she realized. She liked him.
Kaol watched Parrington at his table in the dining hall. When he had approached the Duke about Varin's death, he hadn't seemed bothered.
Kaol looked around the cavernous hall. In fact, most of the champion sponsors went about as usual.
Idiots.
If Selena was actually right about it, then whoever was responsible for killing the champions could be among them.
But which of the members of the King's Council would be so desperate to win that he'd do such a thing?
Kaol stretched his legs beneath the table and shifted his attention back to Parrington.
He'd seen how the Duke used his size and title to win allies on the King's Council and keep opponents from challenging him. But it wasn't his maneuverings that had captured the interest of the Captain of the Guard tonight. Rather, it was the moments between the grins and laughter, when a shadow passed across the Duke's face. It wasn't an expression of anger or of disgust, but a shade that clouded his eyes. It was so strange that when Kaol had first seen it, he'd extended his dinner just to see if it happened again. A few moments later, it did. Parrington's eyes became dark, and his face cleared, as if he saw everything in the world for what it was, and found no joy or amusement in it. Kaol leaned back in his chair, sipping his water. He knew little of the Duke, and had never entirely trusted him. Neither had Dorian, especially not after all his talk of using Nehemia as a hostage to get the Ilway rebels to cooperate. But the Duke was the King's most trusted advisor, and had offered no cause for mistrust other than a fierce belief in Otterlin's right to conquest. Caltaine Rompier sat a few chairs away. Kaol's brows rose slightly. Her eyes were upon Parrington as well, filled not with the longing of a beloved, but with cold contemplation. Kaol stretched again, lifting his arms over his head. Where was Dorian? The prince hadn't come to dinner, nor was he in the kennels with the bitch and her pups. His gaze returned to the duke. There it was, for a moment. Parrington's eyes fell upon the black ring on his left hand and darkened, as if his pupils had expanded to encompass all of each eye. Then it was gone. His eyes returned to normal. Kaol looked to Caltaine. Had she noticed the odd change? No. Her face remained the same. There was no bewilderment, no surprise. Her look became shallow, as if she were more interested in how his jacket might complement her dress. Kaol stretched and rose, finishing his apple as he strode from the dining hall. Strange as it was, he had enough to worry about. The duke was ambitious, but certainly not a threat to the castle or its inhabitants. But even as the captain of the guard walked to his rooms, he couldn't shake the feeling that Duke Parrington had been watching him, too.
Chapter 31
Someone was standing at the foot of her bed. Selena knew this long before she opened her eyes, and she eased her hand beneath her pillow, pulling out the makeshift knife she'd crafted of pin, string, and soap.
That's unnecessary,
a woman said, and Selena sat upright at the sound of Elena's voice.
And would be wholly ineffective.
Her blood went cold at the sight of the shimmering specter of the first Queen of Otterlin. Though Elena looked fully formed, the edges of her body gleamed as though made from starlight. Her long silver hair flowed around her beautiful face, and she smiled as Selena set down her miserably pathetic knife.
Hello, child, the queen said.
What do you want? Selena demanded, but kept her voice down.
Was she dreaming, or could the guards hear her?
She tensed, her legs preparing to leap from the bed, perhaps toward the balcony, since Elena stood between her and the door.
Simply to remind you that you must win this competition.
I already planned to.
She'd been woken up for this?
And it's not for you, she added coldly. I'm doing it for my freedom. Do you have anything useful to say, or are you just here to bother me? Or maybe you could just tell me more about this evil thing that's hunting the champions down one by one.
Elena sighed, lifting her eyes to the ceiling. I know as little as you.
When Selena's frown didn't disappear, Elena said,
You don't trust me yet. I understand. But you and I are on the same side, whether you allow yourself to believe it or not.
She lowered her gaze to the assassin, pinning her with the intensity of it.
I came here to warn you to keep an eye on your right.
Excuse me? Selena cocked her head. What does that mean?
Look to your right. You'll find the answers there.
Selena looked to her right, but all she saw was the tapestry that concealed the tomb. She opened her mouth to snap a response, but when she looked back at Elena, the queen was gone. At her test the next day, Selena studied the small table before her and all the goblets it contained. It had been over 2 weeks since Sam Heughan, and while she'd passed yet another test, knife-throwing to her relief, another champion had been found dead just 2 days ago. To say she was getting little sleep these days was an understatement. When she wasn't searching for an indication of what the word marks around the corpses had meant, she spent most of the night wide awake, watching her windows and doors, listening for the scrape of claw on stone. The royal guards outside her rooms didn't help. If this beast was capable of gouging marble, it could take down a few men. Brello stood at the front of the sparring hall, his hands clasped behind his back, watching the 13 remaining competitors standing at 13 individual tables. He glanced at the clock. Selena looked at it, too. She had 5 minutes left. 5 minutes during which she not only had to identify the poisons in 7 goblets, but arrange them in the order of the most benign to the deadliest. The true test, however, would come at the end of the 5 minutes, when they were to drink from the goblet they deemed the most harmless. If they got the answer wrong, even with antidotes on hand, it would be unpleasant. Selena rolled her neck and lifted one of the goblets to her nose, sniffing.
Sweet,
Too sweet. She swirled the dessert wine they'd used to conceal the sweetness, but in the bronze goblet it was difficult to see the color. She dipped her finger into the cup, studying the purple liquid as it dripped off her nail. Definitely belladonna. She looked at the other goblets she'd identified. Hemlock, bloodroot, monk's hood, oleander. She shifted the goblets into order, squeezing in belladonna just before the goblet containing a lethal dose of oleander. 3 minutes left. Selena picked up the penultimate goblet and sniffed. And sniffed again. It didn't smell like anything. She shifted her face away from the table and sniffed the air, hoping to clear her nostrils. When trying perfumes, people sometimes lose their sense of smell after sniffing too many, which was why perfumers usually kept something on site to help clear the scent from the nose. She sniffed the goblet again and dunked her finger. It smelled like water, looked like water. Perhaps it was just water. She set down the glass and picked up the final goblet, but when she sniffed it, the wine inside didn't have any unusual smell. It seemed fine. She bit her lip and glanced at the clock. 2 minutes left. Some of the other champions were cursing under their breath. Whoever got the order most wrong went home. Selena sniffed the goblet again, racing through a list of odorless poisons. None of them could be combined with water, not without coloring it. She picked up the wine goblet, swirling the liquid. Wine could conceal any number of advanced poisons. But which one was it? At the table to the left of her, Knox ran his hands through his dark hair. He had 3 goblets in front of him, the other 4 in line behind them. 90 seconds left. Poisons, poisons, poisons. Her mouth went dry. If she lost, would Elena haunt her from spite? Selena glanced to the right to find Paylor, the gangly young assassin, watching her. He was down to the same 2 goblets that she struggled with, and she watched as he put the water glass at the very end of the spectrum, the most poisonous, and the wine glass at the other. His eyes flicked to hers, and his chin drooped in a barely detectable nod. He put his hands in his pockets. He was done. Selena turned to her own goblets before Brello could catch her. Poisons. That's what Paylor had said during their first test. He was trained in poisons. She glanced at him sidelong. He stood to her right. Look to your right. You'll find the answers there. A chill went down her spine. Elena had been telling the truth. Paylor stared at the clock, watching it count down the seconds until the test was over. But why help her? She moved the water glass to the end of the line and put the wine glass first. Because aside from her, Kane's favorite champion to torment was Paylor. And because when she'd been in Endovier, the allies she'd made hadn't been the darlings of the Overseers, but the ones the Overseers had hated the most. The outsiders looked out for each other. None of the other champions had bothered to pay attention to Paylor. Even Brello, it seemed, had forgotten Paylor's claim that first day. If he'd known, he never would have allowed them to do the test so publicly.
Time's up. Make your final order, Brello said,
and Selena stared at her line of goblets for a moment longer. On the side of the room, Dorian and Kaol watched with crossed arms. Had they noticed Paylor's help?
Knox cursed colorfully and shoved his remaining glasses into the line, many of the competitors doing the same. Antidotes were on hand in case mistakes were made, and as Brello began going through the tables, telling the champions to drink, he handed them out frequently. Most of them had assumed the wine with nothing in it was a trap and placed it toward the end of the spectrum. Even Knox wound up chugging a vial of antidote. He put monk's hood first. And Kane, to her delight, wound up going purple in the face after consuming belladonna. As he guzzled down the antidote, she wished Brello had somehow run out. So far, no one had won the test. One champion drank the water and was on the ground before Brello could hand him the antidote. Bloodbane, a horrible, painful poison. Even consuming just a little could cause vivid hallucinations and disorientation. Thankfully, the weapons master forced him to swallow the antidote, though the champion still had to be rushed to the castle infirmary.
At last, Brello stopped at her table to survey her line of goblets. His face revealed nothing as he said,
"On with it, then."
Selena glanced at Paylor, whose hazel eyes shone as she lifted the glass of wine to her lips and drank a sip. Nothing. No strange taste, no immediate sensation. Some poisons could take longer to affect you, but... Brello extended a fist to her, and her stomach clenched. Was the antidote inside? But his finger splayed, and he only clapped her on the back.
"The right one. Just wine," he said,
and the champions murmured behind him. He moved on to Paylor, the last champion, and the youth drank the glass of wine. Brello grinned at him, grasping his shoulder.
"Another winner!"
Applause rippled through the sponsors and trainers, and Selena flashed an appreciative grin in the assassin's direction. He grinned back, going red from his neck to his copper hair. So she'd cheated a little, but she'd won. She could handle sharing the victory with an ally. And yes, Elena was looking out for her, but that didn't change anything. Even if her path and Elena's demands were now tied closely together, she wouldn't become the king's champion just to serve some ghost's agenda, an agenda that Elena had twice now failed to reveal. Even if Elena had told her how to win the test. Chapter 32. After cutting short their lesson in favor of a stroll, Selena and Nehemia walked through the spacious halls of the castle, guards trailing behind them. Whatever Nehemia thought of the flock of guards that followed Selena everywhere, she didn't say anything, despite the fact that Yulmus was a month away, and the final duel 5 days after that. Every evening, for an hour before dinner, Selena and the princess divided their time equally between Ilwe and the common tongue. Selena had Nehemia read from her library books, and then forced her to copy letter after letter until they looked flawless. Since they'd begun their lessons, the princess had greatly improved her fluency in the common tongue, though the girl still spoke Ilwe. Perhaps it was for ease and comfort. Perhaps it was to see the raised eyebrows and gaping mouths when others overheard them. Perhaps it was to keep their conversations private. Whichever reason, the assassin found the language preferable. At least Endovir had taught her something. "You're quiet today," Nehemia said. "Is something the matter?" Selena smiled weakly. Something was the matter. She'd slept so poorly the previous night that she'd wished for dawn to arrive early. Another champion was dead. Not to mention there was still the matter of Elena's commands. "I was up late reading, is all." They entered a part of the castle that Selena had never seen before. "I sense much worry in you," Nehemia said suddenly, "and I hear much that you do not say. You never voice any of your troubles, though your eyes betray them."
Was she so transparent?
"We're friends," Nehemia said softly. "When you need me, I'll be there." Selena's throat tightened, and she put a hand on Nehemia's shoulder. "No one has called me friend in a long time," the assassin said. "I..." An inky black crept into the corner of her memory, and she struggled against it. "There are parts of me that I..."
She heard it then, the sound that haunted her dreams.
Hooves pounding, thunderous hooves.
Selena shook her head and the sound stopped.
"Thank you, Nehemia," she said with sincerity. "You're a true friend." Her heart was raw and trembling, and the darkness faded.
Nehemia suddenly groaned.
"The queen asked me to watch some acting troupe perform one of her favorite plays tonight. Will you go with me? I could use a translator."
Selena frowned.
"I'm afraid that..."
"You cannot go."
Nehemia's voice was tinted with annoyance, and Selena gave her friend an apologetic look.
"There are certain things that..."
Selena began, but the princess shook her head.
"We all have our secrets.
Though I'm curious why you're so closely watched by that captain and locked in your rooms at night.
If I were a fool, I'd say they're afraid of you."
The assassin smiled. "Men will always be silly about such things."
She thought about what the princess had said, and worry slipped into her stomach. "So are you actually on good terms with the Queen of Otterlin? You didn't really make an effort to start off that way." The princess nodded, lifting her chin.
You know that the situation between our countries isn't pleasant right now. While I might have been a little distant with Georgina at first, I realized that it might be in Ilwe's best interest if I make more of an effort. So I've been speaking with her for some weeks now, hoping to make her aware of how we might improve our relations. I think inviting me tonight is a sign that I might be making some progress.
And, Selena realized, through Georgina, Nehemia would also get the King of Otterland's ear.
Selena bit her lip, but then quickly smiled.
I'm sure your parents are pleased.
They turned down a hall and the sound of barking dogs filled the air. Where are we?
The kennels. Nehemia beamed. The prince showed me the pups yesterday, though I think he was just looking for an excuse to get out of his mother's court for a while.
It was bad enough they were walking together without Kaol, but to enter the kennels.
Are we allowed to be here?
Nehemia straightened.
I am Princess of Ilwe, she said. I can go wherever I please.
Selena followed the princess through a large wooden door. Wrinkling her nose at the sudden smell, the assassin walked past cages and stalls filled with dogs of many different breeds. Some were so large that they came up to her hip, while others had legs the length of her hand with bodies as long as her arm. The breeds were all fascinating and beautiful, but the sleek hounds aroused awe within her breast. Their arched undersides and slender, long legs were full of grace and speed. They did not yap as the other dogs did, but sat perfectly still and watched her with dark, wise eyes.
Are these all hunting dogs? Selena asked,
but Nehemia had disappeared.
She could hear her voice, and the voice of another, and then saw a hand extended from within a stall to beckon Selena inside.
The assassin hurried to the pen and looked down over the gate. Dorian Havilyard smiled at her as Nehemia took a seat.
Why, hello, Lady Lillian, he purred,
and set aside a brown and gold puppy. I didn't expect to see you here, though with Nehemia's passion for hunting, I can't say I'm surprised she finally dragged you along.
Selena stared at the four dogs. These are the mutts?
Dorian picked one up and stroked its head. Pity, isn't it? I still can't resist their charm.
Carefully, watching Nehemia laugh as two dogs leapt upon her and buried her beneath tongues and wagging tails, the assassin opened the pen door and slipped inside.
Nehemia pointed to the corner.
Is that dog sick? She asked. There was a fifth pup, a bit larger than the others, and its coat was a silky, silvery gold that shimmered in the shadows. It opened its dark eyes, as if it knew it was being spoken about, and watched them. It was a beautiful animal, and had Selena not known better, she would have thought it purebred.
It's not sick, Dorian said. It just has a foul disposition. It won't come near anyone, human or canine.
With good reason, Selena said, stepping over the legs of the crown prince and nearing the fifth pup.
Why should it touch someone like you?
If it won't respond to humans, then it will have to be killed, Dorian said offhandedly, and a spark went through Selena.
Kill it? Kill it? For what reason? What did it do to you?
It won't make a suitable pet, which is what all of these dogs will become.
So you'd kill it because of its temperament? It can't help being that way.
She looked around.
Where's its mother? Perhaps it needs her.
Its mother only sees them to nurse and for a few hours of socialization. I usually raise these dogs for racing and hunting, not for cuddling.
It's cruel to keep it from its mother.
The assassin reached into the shadow and scooped the puppy into her arms. She held it against her chest.
I won't let you harm it.
If its spirit is strange, Nehemia offered, it would be a burden.
A burden to whom?
It's nothing to be upset about, Dorian said. Plenty of dogs are painlessly laid to rest each day. I don't see why you would object to that.
Well, don't kill this one, she said. Let me keep it, if only so you don't kill it.
Dorian observed her.
If it upsets you so much, I won't have it killed. I'll arrange for a home, and I'll even ask for your approval before I make a final decision.
You do that?
What's the dog's life to me?
If it pleases you, then it shall happen. Her face burned as he rose to his feet, standing close. You promise?
He put a hand on his heart. I swear on my crown that the pup shall live.
She was suddenly aware of how near to touching they were.
Thank you.
Nehemia watched them from the floor, her brows raised, until one of her personal guards appeared at the gate.
It's time to go, princess, he said in Eelway. You must dress for your evening with the queen.
The princess stood, pushing past the bouncing puppies.
Do you want to walk with me?
Nehemia said in the common tongue to Selena. Selena nodded and opened the gate for them. Shutting the gate, she looked back at the crown prince. Well, aren't you coming with us? He slumped down into the pen, and the puppies immediately leapt on him.
Perhaps I'll see you later tonight.
If you're lucky,
Selena purred, and walked away. She smiled to herself as they strode through the castle. Eventually, Nehemia turned to her.
Do you like him?
Selena made a face. Of course not. Why would I?
You converse easily. It seems as if you have a connection.
A connection? Selena choked on the word. I just enjoy teasing him.
It's not a crime if you consider him handsome.
I'll admit I judged him wrong. I thought him to be a pompous, selfish idiot, but he's not so bad. He's a Havilyard.
My mother was the daughter of a chief who sought to overthrow my grandfather.
We're both silly. It's nothing.
He seems to take great interest in you.
Selena's head whipped around, her eyes full of long-forgotten fury that made her belly ache and twist. I would sooner cut out my own heart than love a Havilyard, she snarled. They completed their walk in silence, and when they parted ways, Selena quickly wished Nehemia a pleasant evening before striding to her part of the castle. The few guards that followed her remained a respectful distance away, a distance that grew greater each day. Based on Kaol's orders? Night had recently fallen, and the sky remained a deep blue, staining the snow piled upon the panes of the windows. She could easily walk right out of the castle, stock up on supplies in Rifthold, and be on a ship to the south by morning. Selena stopped at a window, leaning in close to the panes. The guard stopped too, and said nothing as they waited. The coldness from outside seeped in, kissing her face. Would they expect her to go south? Perhaps going north would be the unexpected choice. No one went north in winter unless they had a death wish. Something shifted in the reflection of the window, and she whirled as she beheld the man standing behind her. But Cain didn't smile at her, not in that mocking way. Instead, he panted, his mouth opening and closing like a fish wrenched from water. His dark eyes were wide, and he had a hand around his enormous throat. Hopefully he was choking to death.
Is something wrong?
She asked sweetly, leaning against the wall. He glanced from side to side, at the guards, at the window, before his eyes snapped to hers. His grip on his throat tightened, as if to silence the words that fought to come out, and the ebony ring on his finger gleamed dully. Even though it should have been impossible, he seemed to have packed on an additional 10 pounds of muscle in the past few days. In fact, every time she saw him, Cain seemed bigger and bigger. Her brows knotted, and she uncrossed her arms.
Cain?
She said, but he took off down the hall like a jackrabbit, faster than he should have any ability to run. He peered a few times over his shoulder, not at her or the confused and murmuring guards, but at something beyond. Selena waited until the sounds of his fleeing footsteps faded, then hurried back to her own rooms. She sent messages to Nox and Paylor, not explaining why, but just telling them to stay in their chambers that night and not open the door for anyone. Chapter 33 Caltaine pinched her cheeks as she emerged from the dressing room. Her servant sprayed perfume, and the young woman gulped down sugar water before putting her hand on the door. She'd been in the midst of smoking a pipe when Duke Parrington had been announced. She'd fled into the dressing room and changed her clothes, hoping the scent wouldn't linger. If he found out about the opium, she could just blame it on the horrible headaches she'd been having lately. Caltaine passed through her bedroom into the foyer, and then into the sitting room. He looked ready for battle, as always.
"Your Grace," she said, curtsying.
The world was foggy around the edges, and her body felt heavy. He kissed her hand when she offered it, his lips soggy against her skin. Their eyes met as he looked up from her hand, and a piece of the world slipped away. How far would she go to secure her position at Dorian's side?
"I hope I didn't disturb you," he said, releasing her hand.
The walls of the room appeared, and then the floor and the ceiling, and she had the distinct feeling that she was trapped in a box, a lovely cage filled with tapestries and cushions.
"I was only napping, my lord," she said, sitting down.
He sniffed, and Caltaine would have felt immensely nervous were it not for the drug curling around her mind.
"To what do I owe the pleasure of this unexpected visit?"
"I wished to inquire after you. I didn't see you at dinner."
Parrington crossed his arms, arms that looked capable of crushing her skull.
"I was indisposed."
She resisted the urge to rest her too heavy head on the couch. He said something to her, but she found that her ears had stopped hearing. His skin seemed to harden and glaze over, and his eyes became unforgiving marble orbs. Even the thinning hair was frozen in stone. She gaped as the white mouth continued to move, revealing a throat of caved marble.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I'm not feeling well."
"Shall I fetch you water?"
The Duke stood.
"Or shall I go?"
"No,"
she said, almost crying out. Her heart twitched.
"What I mean is, I'm well enough to enjoy your company, but you must forgive my absent-mindedness."
"I wouldn't call you absent-minded, Lady Caltaine," he said, sitting down. "You're one of the cleverest women I've met. His Highness told me the same thing yesterday."
Caltaine's spine snapped and straightened. She saw Dorian's face and the crown that sat upon his head.
"The prince said that? About me?"
The Duke put a hand on her knee, stroking it with his thumb.
"Of course," then Lady Lillian interrupted before he could say more.
Her head spun.
"Why was she with him?"
"I don't know. I wish it were otherwise."
She must do something, something to stop this. The girl moved fast, too fast for her maneuvering. Lillian had snared the crown prince in her net, and now Caltaine must cut him free. Parrington could do it. He could make Lillian disappear and never be found. No, Lillian was a lady, and a man with as much honor as Parrington would never harm one of noble birth. Or would he? Skeletons danced in circles around her head. But what if he thought Lady Lillian weren't a lady? Her headache flared to life with a sudden burst that sucked the air from her lungs.
"I had the same reaction," she said, rubbing her temple. "It's hard to believe someone as disreputable as the Lady Lillian won the heart of the prince."
Maybe the headaches would stop once she was at Dorian's side.
Perhaps it would do some good if someone spoke to His Highness.
"Disreputable?"
"I heard from someone that her background is not as pure as it should be."
"What have you heard?" Parrington demanded.
Caltaine played with a jewel hanging from her bracelet.
"I didn't give specifics, but some of the nobility don't believe her to be a worthy companion of anyone in this court. I'd like to learn more about the Lady Lillian, wouldn't you? It's our duty as loyal subjects of the crown to protect our prince from such forces."
"Indeed it is," the Duke said quietly.
Something wild and foreign issued a cry within her, shattering through the pain in her head, and thoughts of poppies and cages faded away. She must do what was necessary to save the crown, and her future. Selena looked up from an ancient book of wordmark theories as the door creaked open, the hinges squealing loud enough to wake the dead. Her heart skipped a beat, and she tried to appear as casual as possible. But it was not Dorian Havilliard who entered, nor was it a ferocious creature. The door finished opening, and Nehemia, clad in a gold-worked wonder, stood before her. She didn't look at Selena, nor did she move as she stood in the doorway. Her eyes were upon the floor, and rivers of coal ran down her cheeks. Nehemia? Selena asked, getting to her feet. What happened to the play?
Nehemia's shoulders rose and fell.
Slowly, she lifted her head, revealing red-rimmed eyes.
I didn't know where else to go, she said in Eelway.
Selena found breathing a bit difficult as she asked, What happened? It was then that Selena noticed the piece of paper in Nehemia's hands. It trembled in her grasp.
They massacred them, Nehemia whispered, her eyes wide.
She shook her head, as if she were denying her own words.
Selena went still.
Who?
Nehemia let out a strangled sob, and a part of Selena broke at the agony in the sound.
A legion of Otterlin's army captured 500 Eelway rebels, hiding on the border of Oakwald Forest and the Stone Marshes.
Tears dripped from Nehemia's cheeks and onto her white dress. She crumpled the piece of paper in her hand.
My father says they were to go to Calicalla as prisoners of war. But some of the rebels tried to escape on the journey, and...
Nehemia breathed hard, fighting to get the words out.
And the soldiers killed them all as punishment. Even the children.
Selena's dinner rose in her throat.
500 butchered.
Selena became aware of Nehemia's personal guard standing in the doorway, their eyes gleaming. How many of the rebels had been people that they knew, that Nehemia had somehow helped and protected?
What is the point in being a princess of Eelway if I cannot help my people? Nehemia said. How can I call myself their princess when such things happen?
I'm so sorry, Selena whispered. As if those words broke the spell that had been holding the princess in place, Nehemia rushed into her arms. Her gold jewelry pressed hard into Selena's skin. Nehemia wept. Unable to say anything, the assassins simply held her, for as long as it took for the pain to ease.
Chapter 34 Selena sat by a window in her bedroom, watching the snow dance in the night air.
Nehemia had long since returned to her own rooms, tears dried and shoulders squared once more. The clock chimed 11, and Selena stretched, but then stopped as pain seized her stomach. She bent over, focusing on her breathing, and waited for the cramp to pass. She'd been like this for over an hour now, and she pulled her blanket tighter around herself, the heat of the roaring fire not adequately reaching her seat by the window. Thankfully, Philippa entered, extending a cup of tea.
Here, child, she said. This will help.
She placed it on the table beside the assassin and rested a hand on the armchair.
Pity what happened to those Eelway rebels,
she said quietly enough that no listening ears might hear.
I can't imagine what the princess must be feeling.
Selena felt anger bubble alongside the pain in her stomach.
She's fortunate to have a good friend like you, though.
Selena touched Philippa's hand.
Thank you.
She grabbed her teacup and hissed, almost dropping it into her lap as the scalding hot cup bit into her hand. Careful now, Philippa chuckled.
I didn't know assassins could be so clumsy. If you need anything, send word.
I've had my fair share of monthly pains.
Philippa ruffled Selena's hair and left. Selena would have thanked her again, but another wave of cramping took over, and she leaned forward as the door closed. Her weight gain over the past 3.5 months had allowed for her monthly cycles to return, after near starvation in Endovir had made them vanish. Selena groaned. How was she going to train like this? The duel was 4 weeks away. The snowflakes sparkled and shimmered beyond the glass panes of the window, twirling and weaving as they flew to the ground in a waltz that was beyond human comprehension. How could Elena expect her to defeat some evil in this castle, when there was so much more of it out there? What was any of this compared to what was occurring in the other kingdoms? As close as Endovir and Calcalla, even. The door to her bedroom opened, and someone approached.
I heard about Nehemia.
It was Kaol.
What are you... Isn't it late for you to be here?
She asked, pulling the blankets tight.
Are you sick?
I'm indisposed.
Because of what happened to those rebels?
Didn't he get it?
Selena grimaced.
No, I'm truly feeling unwell.
It makes me sick, too,
Kaol murmured, glaring at the floor.
all of it. And after seeing Andovir, he rubbed his face, as if he could clear away the memories of it. 500 people, he whispered. Stunned at what he was admitting, she could only watch. Listen, he began, and started to pace. I know that I'm sometimes aloof with you, and I know you complain about it to Dorian, but... He turned to her. It's a good thing that you befriended the princess, and I appreciate your honesty and unwavering friendship with her. I know there are rumors about Nehemia's connection to the rebels in Ilway, but I'd like to think that if my country was conquered, I would stop at nothing to win back my people's freedom, too. She would have replied were it not for the deep pain that wrapped around her lower spine and the sudden churning in her stomach. I might, he started, looking at the window. I might have been wrong. The world began to spin and tilt, and Selena closed her eyes. She'd always had horrible cramping, usually accompanied by nausea, but she wouldn't vomit. Not right now. Kaol, she began, putting a hand over her mouth as nausea swelled and took control. It's just that I take great pride in my job, he continued. Kaol, she said again. Oh, she was going to vomit. And you're Otterland's assassin. But I was wondering if you wanted to... Kaol, she warned. As he pivoted, Selena vomited all over the floor. He made a disgusted noise, jumping back a foot. Tears sprang up as the bitter, sharp taste filled her mouth. She hung over her knees, letting drool and bile spill on the floor. Are you... By the word, you're really sick, aren't you? He called for a servant, helping her from the chair. The world was clearer now. What had he been asking? Come on, let's get you into bed. I'm not ill like that, she groaned. He sat on the bed, peeling back the blanket. A servant entered, frowning at the mess on the floor, and shouted for help. Then in what way? Her face was so hot she thought it would melt onto the floor. Oh, you idiot! My monthly cycles finally came back. His face suddenly matched hers, and he stepped away, dragging a hand through his short brown hair. Then I'll take my leave, he stammered and bowed. Selena raised an eyebrow, and then, despite herself, smiled as he left the room as quickly as his feet could go without running, tripping slightly in the doorway as he staggered into the rooms beyond. Selena looked at the servants cleaning. I'm so sorry, she started, but they waved her off. Embarrassed and aching, the assassin climbed farther onto her bed and nestled beneath the covers, hoping sleep would soon come. But sleep wouldn't soon come, and a while later the door opened again, and someone laughed. I intercepted Kaol, and he informed me of your condition. You'd think a man in his position wouldn't be so squeamish, especially after examining all of those corpses. Selena opened an eye and frowned as Dorian sat on her bed. I'm in a state of absolute agony, and I can't be bothered. It can't be that bad, he said, fishing a deck of cards from his jacket. Wanna play? I already told you that I don't feel well. You look fine to me. He skillfully shuffled the deck. Just one game. Don't you pay people to entertain you? He glowered, breaking the deck. You should be honored by my company. I'd be honored if you would leave. For someone who relies on my good graces, you're very bold. Bold? I've barely begun. Lying on her side, she curled her knees to her chest. He laughed, pocketing the deck of cards. Your new canine companion is doing well, if you wish to know. She moaned into her pillow. Go away, I feel like dying. No fair maiden should die alone, he said, putting a hand on hers. Shall I read to you in your final moments? What story would you like? She snatched her hand back. How about the story of the idiotic prince who won't leave the assassin alone? Oh, I love that story. It has such a happy ending, too. Why, the assassin was really feigning her illness in order to get the prince's attention. Who would have guessed it? Such a clever girl. And the bedroom scene is so lovely. It's worth reading through all of their ceaseless banter. Out, out, out! Leave me be and go womanize someone else!
She grabbed a book and chucked it at him. He caught it before it broke his nose, and her eyes widened.
I didn't mean... That wasn't an attack, it was a joke. I didn't mean to actually hurt you, Your Highness, she said in a jumble.
I'd hope that Otterlin's assassin would choose to attack me in a more dignified manner. At least with a sword or a knife, though preferably not in the back. She clutched her belly and bent over. Sometimes she hated being a woman. It's Dorian, by the way, not Your Highness.
Very well.
Say it.
Say what?
Say my name. Say very well, Dorian. She rolled her eyes.
If it pleases your magnanimous holiness, I shall call you by your first name.
Magnanimous holiness? Oh, I like that one. A ghost of a smile appeared on her face, and Dorian looked down at the book.
This isn't one of the books that I sent you. I don't even own books like these.
She laughed weakly and took the tea from the servant as she approached.
Of course you don't, Dorian. I had the maid send for a copy today.
Sunset's Passions, he read, and opened the book to a random page to read aloud. His hands gently caressed her ivory silky His eyes widened.
By the word, do you actually read this rubbish? What happened to symbols and power and Ilwe customs and culture?
She finished her drink, the ginger tea easing her stomach.
You may borrow it when I'm done. If you read it, your literary experience will be complete. And, she added with a coy smile, it will give you some creative ideas of things to do with your lady friends.
He hissed through his teeth. I will not read this.
She took the book from his hands, leaning back. Then I suppose you're just like Kaol.
Kaol? He asked, falling into the trap. You asked Kaol to read this?
He refused, of course, she lied. He said it wasn't right for him to read the sort of material if I gave it to him.
Dorian snatched the book from her hands. Give me that, you demon woman. I'll not have you matching us against each other.
He glanced once more at the novel, then turned it over, concealing the title.
She smiled and resumed watching the falling snow. It was blisteringly cold now, and even the fire could not warm the blasts of wind that crept through the cracks of her balcony doors.
She felt Dorian watching her, and not in the cautious way that Kaol sometimes watched her. Rather, Dorian just seemed to be watching her because he enjoyed watching her. And she enjoyed watching him, too.
Dorian didn't realize he'd been transfixed by her until she straightened and demanded, "What are you staring at?"
You're beautiful, Dorian said before he could think.
Don't be stupid!
Did I offend you?
His blood pumped through him in a strange rhythm. No, she said, and quickly faced the window.
Dorian watched her face turn redder and redder. He'd never known an attractive woman for so long without courting her, save for Caltaine. And he couldn't deny that he was aching to learn what Selena's lips felt like, what her bare skin smelled like, how she'd react to the touch of his fingers along her body. The week surrounding Yulmas was a time of relaxation, a time to celebrate the carnal pleasures that kept one warm on a winter's night. Women wore their hair down. Some even refused to don a corset. It was a holiday to feast on the fruits of the harvest and those of the flesh. Naturally, he looked forward to it every year. But now... Now he had a sinking feeling in his stomach. How could he celebrate when word had just arrived of what his father's soldiers had done to those Ilwe rebels? They hadn't spared a single life. 500 people. All dead. How could he ever look Nehemia in the face again? And how could he someday rule a country whose soldiers had been trained to have so little compassion for human life? Dorian's mouth went dry. Selena was from Terrasen, another conquered country, and his father's first conquest. It was a miracle Selena bothered to acknowledge his existence, or perhaps she'd spent so long in Otterlin that she'd stopped caring. Somehow, Dorian didn't think that was the case. Not when she had the 3 giant scars on her back to forever remind her of his father's brutality.
Is there something the matter? She asked.
Cautiously. Curiously. as if she cared.
He took a deep breath and walked to the window, unable to look at her. The glass was cold beneath his